Hawaii with Truth News Radio, beaming out to you on the 9th of October, 2013. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another show, and we have a very, very important lineup for you today. So I do hope you can join us for the whole 2 hours. It's going to be quite engaging and exhilarating news coverage today. I have two very interesting guests. First guest coming on, Sarah Shabbat, who will be joining us in just a few minutes. She joined us last week from Damascus, but we had some problems with the connection, and unfortunately there was a power outage at her end, and she was unable to continue the interview. But I do have her ready to go again for today, but there are continuing power outages in Damascus, so there is a possibility that the interview will be cut short again. There is also continuous shelling, which you will hear in the background when I'm talking to Sarah Shabbat, but she assures me that that is no threat to her, that that is in fact the government shelling of the rebel-held areas, but it still is quite disconcerting to be listening to that while talking to one's guest on the radio. Now, in the second hour of today's show, I have another very important guest coming on, Gabrielle Phillips Short, a lady who's been on our show before, and she is coming to talk about the subject of child abuse and the cover-up of child abuse in government and religious institutions, going back many decades, of which she was a victim, and which she has testified about in an inquiry which is currently being held in the Victorian Parliament. And I actually have the transcript of her testimony from Parliament, which I've read today, and it's quite shocking. Really, it's even more shocking than the information I already had from her, which was pretty bad. She's a very good-hearted person. It's amazing that she's managed to survive at all, considering what she's been through. So she will be coming on in the second hour to tell us more about the inquiry, and we're going to try and get into the subject of this institutional abuse. We're going to try and understand it. I mean, we're talking here about some of them religious bodies, some of them are part of the Catholic Church. Some of them, as I've seen in the transcripts from the inquiry, some of the, like the Franciscans, are involved in this as well. And some of them are government institutions. It seems to cut across many different types of institution, you know, be they secular or be they non-secular. Of course, the abuse varies too, but there seems to me to be something intrinsic in the nature of these types of institutions. And I've talked about this on the show before, about the prison guard mentality that develops. And I referred to Philip Zimbardo's work in the past, which tells a lot about the potential of human beings to become quite evil in these type of situations. So we will be returning to discuss some of these issues in the second hour with my guest, Gabrielle Short. Now, in the meantime, I want to talk about another type of abuse, which is really quite bizarre, and calling it abuse is perhaps a stretch of the meaning of the term. But I want to talk about this phenomenon of parents locking their kids in cars and leaving them there, often to die. I mean, there is actually an epidemic of this occurring around the world. And I think there's something very fishy about it. I think there's some aspects to this that we're not being told about. And I suspect it may have something to do with the pharmaceutical industry. But that's really just a guess at this point because I don't really have any more facts. But let me play to you a little clip here from an ABC story on a recent tragedy which took place in Perth.
Now to a situation that is almost impossible to comprehend. A parent forgetting to drop their child at daycare and leaving them in a car with fatal consequences. After the death of an 11-month-old boy in Perth this week, that is the account being given to police by the distraught father. Researchers into similar incidents overseas say many parents are vulnerable to lapses of memory and sometimes with those sort of devastating results. Katie Heyman prepared this report and a warning that the detail may be upsetting and distressing to some of you.
2.5 years ago, on a hot spring day in Austin, Texas, Christy Cavaliero met her husband Brett for a lunch break. As they chatted about their morning, he realized something was wrong.
He couldn't remember dropping her off at daycare. And I instructed him to call his office as we were headed back to his office. And at the same time, I called the daycare. And his office manager checked his truck. And around the same time, the daycare teacher confirmed that she was not there. And so I hung up and immediately called 911. And despite us performing early CPR and myself included trying to assist with resuscitations, despite everything, we lost her in an hour and 19 minutes after the first 911 call. She was declared dead.
She didn't know it at the time, but 911 operators were recording the moment that Christy and her husband saw one-year-old Sophia's body.
I don't remember it, but apparently I let out this huge shrill and just started screaming and stuff. And it was like I left my body for a second.
Sophia is one of as many as 50 children who die each year in the United States from being left inside cars. In 40% of cases, the parent or carer forgot to drop the child at their daycare or babysitter. Police in Western Australia say this is probably what happened in Perth on Wednesday, where an 11-month-old boy was discovered dead in the back of a car. Christy Caballero says such lapses of memory can happen more easily than parents would care to admit. Her husband took a wrong turn because of roadworks at the bottom of their street.
Instead of taking the left turn at the traffic light that he would normally take to drop her off at daycare, he turned right. And then, you know, she was sleeping in the back and quiet and in a rear-facing car seat. And so he just proceeded on his way to his office. And in his mind, he thought that he had already dropped the child off at daycare.
Dr. Matthew Mundy is a memory expert at the School of Psychology and Psychiatry at Monash University. He says every parent is capable of making a similarly fatal mistake.
I'll just leave it there. Now, folks, I think that this position that the experts have taken, that every parent is capable of doing this, is just wrong, okay? Look, I know we all make mistakes, believe me, and I'm not actually trying to judge morally this phenomenon, because I think there is something else at work here. But what I find incredible and very indicative is the way in which the stories are being packaged for the media to make us basically accept that such a gross dereliction of duty, such homicidal negligence, is actually just a normal thing now. Because you can have a memory lapse, you know, your route to work changes, and gee, you know, that's just enough to make you completely forget that you actually have a kid for the rest of the day. I mean, that's just ludicrous, isn't it? Just on the face of it. But if we accept that, if we allow them to frame it in this way, what we're doing is we're possibly allowing them to get away with a cover-up of something else that's going on, which is itself terrible. But what also concerns me is that we're allowing media and so-called experts to completely frame our reality for us. And I've noticed a lot of people respond to this story in a way that that dovetails nicely with what the ABC and the experts have said. Yeah, sure, everybody forgets. It's no big deal. Well, hang on, it's a big deal, right? I mean, you know, but it's not just an accident. It's not just a tragic accident. It's a tragic breakdown in the most basic relationship between parent and child. It's a very, very serious situation. But I think that what needs to be looked at here is the prevalence of many people to be on psychoactive drugs these days. And many of these drugs, including drugs that are prescribed for sleeping disorders, for colds, for the flu, for headaches, a lot of these drugs can actually induce memory lapses. And there is an epidemic of people on psychoactive pharmaceutical prescribed drugs these days. And that, I think, is where we need to be looking at for the truth about this story. Now, just quickly before we go to break and we get to our guest for this show, I've got another story which I believe is misrepresented in the news. It's a story about the new malaria vaccine. A UK firm seeks to market the world's first malaria vaccine. Now, this was announced with massive fanfare on the BBC last night, and they were carrying on about it, and they had all these photographs of giant mosquitoes, and they were interviewing various experts saying, oh, yes, it's an amazing breakthrough, we've got this incredible new vaccine now, and yes, it's really a game changer. And then when they actually got to the meat of it, down to the nub of really what this is all about, you know, none of these news stories, and I went and looked at across the internet, none of these news stories actually explained any details about what this vaccine really is. Because bear in mind, vaccines do not normally treat parasites, or do prevent against parasites. Malaria is caused by a parasite. Vaccines, as the term is currently known, and as it applies across the board in every other case, are applied for viral conditions. And the stimulation of the immune system and the association of antigens with adjuvants is aimed at viruses. Now, of course, I'm a skeptic and a critic across the board of the whole discipline of immunology. But this new phenomenon of the malaria vaccine, if you actually go in and you read the medical journals where they're talking about it, guess what, folks? They don't even know how it works. I mean, there are numerous journal articles which you can find where they admit that the mechanism whereby this vaccine actually functions is not really well understood. But hey, it seems to work. I mean, this is literally how they're presenting it. The vaccine, I mean, malaria is a deeply systemic condition, right? It is caused by massive mosquito infestations, and that again is connected to the way people live. And in the past, societies that have pulled themselves out of cyclical malaria epidemics have been the ones that cleaned up their environment, that drained the swamps. And that, of course, is the way to deal with malaria. What's really worrying about this trend about, you know, everything's just going to be a vaccine, everything's just going to be medication, is it just leaves everything to fester. You know, I mean, you go into some malnourished, primitive backwater of an African society, you don't do anything about improving their basic conditions, their basic hygiene, their basic clean water. You give them a shot. The malaria vaccine is something that needs to be looked at in more depth, because I think it's something very, very fishy about it, as with all vaccines. And, of course, it has this adjuvant squalene in it, which is very significant. We are going to break. I'll be back after the break with my guest, Sarah Shabbat, joining us from Damascus. It's going to be a great interview. Stay with us.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Welcome back, you with Truth News Radio. Well, folks, as promised, I now have Sarah Shabbat back on the line after our slightly troubled conversation last week with the power outage there in Damascus. Sarah, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, look, it's great you could join us again. I really, really appreciate it. Sarah, last we spoke, we were kind of going through the whole history of the situation in Syria, and you were documenting what you know and what's been happening over this period of time with the rebel movement and what the government is doing. And, of course, you support your government. And I'd like to get back into that again in today's show. I'd like it if you could tell us a little bit about why it is that you support your government when it seems like the whole world is telling us that your government is a bad regime, is a brutal regime, is suppressing people's rights. Can you just tell us a little bit more about why it is that you support your government?
Why I support my government?
Yes.
Because we have freedom, we have a democracy, we have everything we need. It's a free country, and we are living so good in here for actually.
That is really great to hear. I mean, that's really inspiring, you know, because many countries and many Middle Eastern countries don't have it so good, right? I mean, so Syria is kind of lucky in that way. Is that correct?
Yes, of course, and we have everything we want. We have, you know that in Syria the studying is for free, the not just school and college, it's for free.
Excellent.
Give me a country, the student study in free. No one.
Sarah, could you just move the microphone a little bit away from your mouth? I'm getting a lot of noise. Maybe if you've got the microphone too close, you could just move it away a little from your mouth just to stop the interference.
Is it okay now?
That's a lot better. Yeah, that's a lot better. Thanks. So, yes, you have free education, which is so provided by the government, and yes. You have what is the sort of quality of life there? What's the employment and general standard of living like in Syria?
I speak in Arabic.
Sorry.
Most of people are in the middle, not poor and not so rich. We have the government. It's so good. We have not just a free study, free hospital, free everything. You know that the government give all families in Syria a free free not just a free. It's like a good price by the food also, the family, and not just food. It's also in gas, benzene, everything.
Okay, so the government helps people. Is this what you're saying? The government provides extra
money?
Yes, extra
they
money?
Give, the, give family those things by more than half the price.
Oh, really? More than half the price. Okay, that's really interesting.
I mean, the government cost the family less than half the price, not more, I'm sorry.
Right. So okay. Sorry. Please continue. Please continue.
When we go shopping, we will get a rice it's so not cheap. The government give it us for less than half the price.
And this
just
is
for families. They like families to be in Syria. They like Syrian people.
And this is provided to all citizens of Syria.
Yes, all the citizens in all of Syria, not just in Damascus.
Right. Interesting. Interesting. And of course, Syria is a country that has a secular government. Is that correct? Syria does not have like a government that is like that enforces religion. Am I correct in saying that?
No. We have in the government several religion, not just one.
Right. So what are the main religions that you have in Syria?
We have Islam. The Islam is Sunnah, Alawi, and we have also Sunnah, Alawi, Ismaili, Dirzi. It's four. And also we have Christian, Rome, Catholic, Orthodox, everything.
Okay, so a wide range of different religious...
People don't believe in God.
Okay, so you have atheists too, right?
Yeah.
And your country accepts everyone. It's tolerant.
Yes, of course. And we never have a problem before the Christ.
That is very, very interesting, Sarah. Can I ask you, from your memory, when did the problems begin in Syria? How many years ago? Was it 1, 2, 3 years? When did it start in your mind?
It start not just from 2.5 years. It seemed like before they hit Syria. We know that it's not from Syrian people. It's from Arabic people and American people and British people and especially Israel people.
Right.
They hit Syria, so they do it. Not like we have it just from 2.5 years. No, it's we have it before.
It's been
they hate Syria and they don't want Syria to be with any arrangement from Israel or America.
I understand. And so, for many years, there has been a desire on the part of some of these countries, some of these forces, to take Syria down. And what you're saying is that what we're seeing now is that this is their plan, that the foreign
forces... many years old.
I see.
This is their plan to get Syria down, to have our gas, our petrol, everything, our money, our country, that's all. They want to give it to Israel above of Palestine.
Of course. And, of course, Syria is borders on Israel, correct? You have Israel to the west of Syria.
Yes, we have. They have a city from Syria called Golan.
Okay, and the Golan Heights. Now, is this part of Syria or part of Israel, or this was disputed at one point?
No, it's from Syria. They have taken it from us.
I see. Right, and this goes back to the Yom Kippur War, or some period back, many decades ago, when Israel was at war with Syria. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So now the situation that you have in Damascus, what is your feeling about it? Do you feel positive? Do the people you are with feel positive?
Yes, because we are getting our Syria back now. Inshallah, we will get all the tourists out of our country.
That's great that you feel confident about what you're doing. Sarah, we're just going to break. We're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm interviewing Sarah Shabbat from Damascus. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. I'm talking to Sarah Shabbat from Damascus in Syria. Sarah has joined us from an internet cafe, so I do apologise. There will be some background noise. There's not a lot we can do about it, but I think it's very important that we have this interview today. Sarah, I really do appreciate your coming on the show today. And the main point of this show is to break through the media blockade about what is really going on in your country. And however difficult it is, I think it's very important that we do this. What's your opinion on that?
I don't get the question, I'm sorry.
The media has not given us a very clear picture of what is going on in Syria.
And, of course.
And the reason I'm talking to you is that it is very important that we break through that. We have to break through the barrier and the blockade because the rest of the world is getting their information from the BBC, from CNN, from CNBC, from Al Jazeera. And, I mean, what's your opinion? Let's just talk about that. What is your opinion of all these news networks?
To be true with you, my opinion is that the Syrian media don't give a clear message to the whole world. They only talk about our government. They don't talk about the revolution and what they are doing. I think it's a big mistake for our government to have like that some media like that. We will take care of it when we will end from that. I think the people they want to really have a great idea about what's happening in Syria. They have to watch not Al Jazeera and BBC and like that. They will can watch Al Mayadeen. It's a good. Good TV.
Okay.
They get the idea from the both side, not from one side.
Okay. That's good to know.
They have some reporter go with the government and the Syrian army, and they have some reporter go with the revolution and the revolution army.
So this is from Syrian media, but of course we don't see Syrian media.
No, it's not Syrian media. It's Lebanon media.
Oh, from Lebanon, is it? Right.
Not Syrian.
Can people overseas...
Syrian media don't give the right message.
I understand. Sarah, can people overseas listen or watch this media that you're talking to from Lebanon? Is it available on the internet?
Yes. It's www.almayadeen.com.
How do we spell that? We'll put it on the show notes. Yeah, we'll put it on the show notes because I think it's really good for listeners to this show to have a website they can go to that can show some different media coverage of what's going on.
You have Almayadeen, you have Almanar, you have a lot of... TVs that having www.almayadeen.net.
Excellent. I'm sure many people would like to check that out because many people around the world do not believe what their governments, what the UN, what many of these people are saying about Syria. We have formed the opinion that our media and our government is lying to us. And that's why it's very important to speak to you directly because it's very different when we speak to someone directly in a country rather than hearing about what the reporters and the journalists tell you about that country.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's a very, very different picture. Now, for example, what you told me about the quality of life in Syria, this is something we never hear about in the West. No one ever talks about this. So I really appreciate your coming on and talking about that. But Sarah, I'd like to return to the question about the chemical weapons attacks, because this, of course, has been the biggest news story, and it has been one of the biggest news stories in the world of the last 6 months or so, and it is still very, very big in the news from the Western media. But now, of course, the focus has shifted. Instead of talking about the chemical weapons attacks, they're now talking about the disarmament, and all the journalists and the media are saying, you know, is Syria going to disarm? Are they following the correct procedures, et cetera, et cetera? But last week, you made a revelation on this show, which I had not heard before and which was quite startling to me. You said that you thought that the chemical weapons attacks were completely faked. Can you just repeat that again for our audience?
Yes, I say that it's totally a fake. If there is a chemical attack, where is the chemical will be in the air, in the earth, and everything, even in the clothes of the children that they die? What is it? It's have to get some people, and they will die if they go to there. I'm not dying. I go there and I'm not dying. And all that children that they die, where is their parents if they are in their home when the chemical attack, when the chemical attacks were in the first of all? Why all the children die? Why we don't have a grown-up? Their parents, where are them? They only kidnap their children and kill them. Kill them and get them in one place and say that the government do that. It's not for real.
So, Sarah, are you saying that you don't believe the words of Secretary of State John Kerry and President Obama, who have both gone on the record very, very loudly and very emotionally, I would say, talking about these children, referring to these videos, and basically putting their credibility on the line to tell the whole world that these chemical attacks really happened, and secondly, that it was the Syrian government that did it? Are you basically saying that these people are lying to us?
Yes, of course. If they don't lie, they will. Why they didn't attack Syria? They know that the same story in Iraq will do. They want to do it again in Syria, that they will attack our country and search for some chemical weapon, and they will not find it. Then they say, "Well, oh, sorry, we are going back. We will not get them to do the same story from Iraq to Syria."
Indeed, indeed. Sarah, can I ask you, what is the current situation? What is the current feeling about the relationship of the Syrian government with the international community? Are things looking better now? I mean, we have the disarmament teams in there now.
It's better, thank for the Syrian government and the Russian government and the Iran government. They protect us. They give us a lot of help during the attack and during all of that. You know that Iran and Russian are helping us, not in weapon. They are helping us by food, by medical.
Yes.
Medical
supplies.
Yes.
That is great. That is obviously very, very important. And the fact that Syria has strong allies has obviously helped greatly in protecting your sovereignty. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm talking to Sarah Shabbat in Damascus. We'll be back after this break. Do stay with us. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Talking to Sarah Shabbat in Damascus, and we've been going through some facts about Syria, about the quality of life in Syria, what it is really like for people, and information coming from directly from the source here, which is quite surprising and quite refreshing, because Syria is a country we don't know a lot about. You know, we on the news and, you know, on the international sort of stage, nobody talked about Syria much for many years. They only started talking about Syria in the wake of the Arab Spring. And of course, there were movements of revolution and protest which occurred in various countries, in Egypt and Tunisia, and then in Libya. And then, of course, troubles started in Syria. And of course, when we saw all that on the news, it was presented to us as, well, this is the Arab Spring moving to Syria. I'd just like to ask Sarah, can you comment on that? I mean, what is your opinion about the Arab Spring? And is what we've seen in Syria, is this in any way similar to what we saw in Egypt, for example?
I think in Egypt, in Libya, in Iraq also, it's a big lie. The people are now lost because they don't have a government, they don't have the right president, they lose everything. You will not have that in Syria. We know that it's a big lie, and we will not repeat it in Syria.
Right. So you don't believe in the Arab Spring. You don't really think the Arab Spring was genuine. Is this what you're saying?
Yes.
So can I just ask, what is your opinion? You don't have to tell me, but what is your opinion about Egypt currently? I mean, Egypt has a situation now where they is similar in some ways to Syria, where they have a very, very hardline fundamentalist Islamic group, the Muslim Brotherhood, which the new government there is basically trying to control, but having difficulty. And the many of the Egyptians, and some people I've spoken to, say that this the Muslim Brotherhood, although it was part of an elected government in the past, is a force that is not about democracy. It is about tyranny, and it is, of course, has the extremist Al-Qaeda elements in it. Is there anything you can say about that and relating that back to Syria?
I think that in Egypt they have so many Muslim Brotherhood,
yeah,
and they are Islamic country, and they are so religion, not same like Syria. We don't have that so in deep in religion. They have it. We don't have, and I think they will be the government for that for this time, but not in the future.
Okay, that's interesting.
They don't have. They don't have the right Islam, so the people will be with them. Okay, they will be like they are like 60. Yes, 60% from the people in Egypt, but the 40 there they are not so Islamic. So they have to deal with them. If they don't fix the situation, they will be more lost and lost. We don't have that the same idea in Syria. Those Islamic people are coming out from Syria, not in Syria. We don't have so much in deep in any religion. And Brotherhood, the Islamic Brotherhood, we don't have it. We don't have Al-Qaeda. It's all getting from Saudi Arabia.
And so if you're saying that you don't have the Muslim Brotherhood, you don't have Al-Qaeda, who are these rebels? I mean, there seems to be a lot of them in your country. Who are they? Where did they come from?
They are Al-Qaeda. They are the Brotherhood Islamic, but they are not from Syria. They are from Saudi Arabia. They are from Jordan, from Tunis, not from Syria.
Okay, so what you're saying is that, yes, they are similar types of movements, similar types of people to what we've seen in Egypt, but it's not intrinsic. It's not part of Syria. It's a completely outside influence that has come into Syria.
Yes, it's a completely different idea from the thing that's happening in Syria.
Okay, I understand. And so what is the solution? Is it going to be necessary? Yeah. Is it going to be necessary for your government to expel these people completely from your country? Is that the plan?
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
You're saying that the rebels in Syria are basically foreigners. So, is the plan, in your understanding, to expel these people from your country?
Yes, we will get them out of Syria. They have to choose, or getting out of Syria and get back to their country, or the Syrian army will kill them. And we want them to kill them because they are killing us.
Yeah.
And we have to defend ourselves.
I understand. But can I just ask, Sarah, because on the news, what we've heard about Syria is that there was a protest movement in Syria that was a Syrian protest movement. Now, I don't know enough about the facts, but it appears that you're saying that there is no real protest movement of Syrians against the government. Or can you clarify that for me at all? Hello, Sarah, are you there?
Yes, I'm there, but I didn't hear you. I don't know why.
That's okay. Let's just continue.
Okay.
Just a question. We're almost out of time.
Yes.
But I want to just ask about the protest movement that we were told in the Western media, on the BBC and CNN, we were told back in 2011 that there was a protest movement of Syrians who wanted more freedom. They wanted more freedom and democracy. Does that exist at all? Is there like a freedom and democracy movement within Syria? It's very important for people to know about this.
For real, we have all the democracy and the freedom in Syria. We don't. The government have no more to give it to us. We have everything we want. We do everything we want. If the democracy and the freedom they want, that they don't get to a police or traffic police or like that. It's not a freedom. It's that they don't want a law in Syria. You understand me? Like, we have every freedom in Syria. We do everything we want. But the thing that it has changed after 2.5 years, it's only that they don't want the law.
The law.
Traffic law, the law... Every law in Syria, they don't want it. They don't want to be under the Syrian law. Not that we don't have a freedom. That's the problem.
Now, who are these people that don't want this? Who are you referring to there?
The revolution.
The rebels.
Yes.
I see.
The rebels. They like the rebels from the start of this is a crisis up until now. They don't listen to the traffic police.
Really, they don't
Why?
Follow basic directions from police. I see.
even traffic police. Why? Why? That's not freedom. That is that you don't want the law in your country. Not the freedom. We have all the freedom we want. You know that in Syria, the president gets a law, a new law, before the crisis, like when some boy and girl are in the car, and even everything they are doing,
yes,
the police will know saying anything.
Right, right. So you have freedom. You're saying you have freedom in
yes.
your country.
Yes, of course. We get, we go and get our freedom, and we don't have any troubles. We get back home anytime we want. We do.
What about freedom of speech? What about freedom to say what you think on the Facebook or on the web page? Freedom to say you disagree with your government. Do you have that sort of freedom?
No, they. They want freedom that they will not listen to the law, not to the government.
I understand. Sarah, it's been a little difficult talking to you today because of some of the background noise and just the difficulty of getting organised. I really do appreciate that you came on, and I will stay in touch. Thanks so much for coming on Truth News Radio.
Thank you very much, and I'm so happy to talk to you.
No, it's been a great pleasure.
Nice to meet you.
Absolutely. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and do stay with us. We'll be back after the break for our second interview. Stay right there. Don't go away.